So as I said a few moments ago, on Friday I'll start the year-long Dharma practice program on the mindfulness of the breathing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about mindfulness of breathing and its role in Buddhism and practice. The Buddha emphasized mindfulness of breathing, a number of different places. One of the more, for me, significant places where it kind of gets emphasized is once after the Buddha was enlightened, he went into the forest to do a three-month kind of self-retreat in the forest. And he said, if anybody asks what I'm doing, people are probably curious, what are you doing in there? Tell them I'm doing mindfulness of breathing. Do you have trouble hearing? Do you have trouble hearing today? No, you speak up earlier, speak up. We're supposed to be kind of informal here, so. Is that better now? Is that better? You can hear now? Okay. So this is a practice of the Buddhas, to practice mindfulness of breathing. And it made a big impression for me when I was practicing in Japan, when the Zen teacher that I was with told me that all of Buddhism, the whole path of Buddhist practice, right up to liberation, can be attained through meditation on the breath, mindfulness of breathing. It's that effective, that significant. And the Buddha did give instructions for how to use breath meditation as a vehicle for liberation, right from being a beginner right up to being, you know, fully liberated. And the most concise place he did that, or the primary place he did that, is in a discourse that he gave called the Discourse on Breathing In and Out, Mindfulness of Breathing. And there he goes through 16 different stages in breathing mindfully. And those 16 stages lead you from the initial contact with the breath in meditation right up to liberation. So in the course of the year, we're going to go over those 16 steps and stages. And certainly with a hope that by the end of the, I guess it's 9 months, and we get to this point 16 stage, you'll all be fully liberated and enlightened. You know, we always wish, we always have that aspiration. So, or at least get a sense of how it all works. There's a story that's told around about of probably a fable of a young person living a monastic life, very dedicated to meditation practice and all that, and just couldn't get concentrated. And the person went to the abbot and said, I'm not getting concentrated, I'm not working, I've been here for years. And this breath thing, I don't understand what's with the breath. It's so boring, you know. You keep telling me focus on the breath, and you know, it's like, you know, it's the most boring thing in the world. My mind provides much more entertainment than the breathing. And I need help. So the abbot took the young practitioner, and they were outside near a well, I guess, or a little pond, and shoved the person's head into the water and kept the person, you know, submerged, head under the water for a while, you know, and you can leave it to your imagination how long exactly, but until probably the person was somewhat desperate to breathe, and then pulled the person up, and the person went, ah, and then breathed and said something like, you know, that's how interesting the breath is. You know, and now you see how, you know, that now you're focused on the breath. Buddhist baptism. And you know, it doesn't take a lot of reflection, I think, about the nature of our breathing to realize the importance and preciousness of breathing. I've been to a few births, but in terms of relationship to the breath, the one that made the most impact on me, big thing that impacted me, was the birth of a calf. And we were there helping give birth. It was a little bit difficult birth for the cow, and then the calf came out, kind of legs first, but still kind of enveloped in some kind of sack that seems like cows sometimes come out in. And but the sack was kind of really transparent, kind of like plastic transparent, so the head came out. The legs and the heads came out, and the head, you know, just eyes closed, and you know, I couldn't tell that the calf was alive. And then suddenly, before the whole cow had come out, just the head and that whatever that sac was, whatever that clear fluid was, whatever it was, burst because it was really thin. And as soon as it burst, the cow opened her eyes and took its breath. And that's, wow, that's it. That's the beginning. I guess life had begun earlier than that, but somehow that ability to have independent life, to be a self-contained, independent being, in a sense, begins with the capacity to breathe, for that first breath. And with my kids, I didn't see their first breath. That for them, you know, their first capacity to be independent was crying. So, and then there's the last breath. A Zen teacher I know, a friend of mine, said it made a big impression on her when someone told her that with your last breath, it'll be your last thought. So, you know, this last breath. Sometimes we watch people as they die, and often we watch their breathing, and you know, as a signal, as a sign that this is the last breath. We watch, and the breath doesn't start again. The person breathed out or breathed in, and nothing followed. Just it stopped, and so that, you know, and then we have this whole life that's bracketed by that first breath, the last breath, and it's possible to spend years and years and years intellectually knowing you breathe, but not really tuning into the breath. We're not really becoming familiar with our breathing, and not really discovering the great capacity, the great potential that's inherent in the way we breathe, in our breathing. And that potential is so great that I really wish that perhaps in high school that there was a class, just like there's PE class, there was a BE class, breath education class. Because the breathing is a really prominent element in the human ecosystem, the psychophysical ecosystem. It's a very important element in the variety of inner cycles, cycles of the stress response, the relaxation response, the hormones and chemicals that get released as there's stress and as there's relaxation. The breath is a prominent player in our emotional life and the feedback between our body and our emotions. The breathing, how we breathe, is a prominent player in our attitude towards life, our relationship to the world around us. And so if we want to have a handle, get a very effective handle into our stress, into our relaxation, into our wellness, into our illness, into our emotional life, into our cognitive life and our attitudes towards life, the breath provides a very, very wonderful one, because it's a feedback system that goes on, because the breath is malleable, it can be changed. And as the breath changes, so does the inner life change, because the whole ecosystem is interconnected. And you take one element of it and change it, then the other things change as well. And if you don't breathe consciously or with mindfulness, you're still going to breathe. And then the breath becomes the passive player in this great inner ecosystem of chemicals and hormones and tension and muscles and emotions and feelings and beliefs and all that. And so you can see that in how we breathe. It doesn't take a lot to track how the breathing changes over different circumstances. I mean, certainly if you could suddenly run, you breathe a lot more than if you're sitting quietly, and you see how that your breathing changes. But you can see that when you get afraid, you can feel the breath gets tight and constricted, and sometimes there's more, the breathing goes up into the chest area, up towards the neck, upper chest, and just a lot more, the muscles have to work a lot harder up here. And then if you're relaxed, you can feel how the breath sometimes can drop down. If you relax enough, and don't hold yourself chronically tense, the breathing drops down and you have more abdominal breathing. And so if you're not conscious and mindfulness of your breathing, then your breathing, how you breathe, is a passive participant in this great big kind of cycles or flow or ecology of the human body, mind. But if you're conscious of your breathing, then a variety of things are possible. One's possible is you can adjust your breathing. Your breathing doesn't have to be a passive player in it all. And so people, you know, it's very common for people, I think, in certain situations to adjust their breathing for their benefit. If you're angry, breathe and count to 10, you know, or breathe deeply. Or if you're afraid of something, if you're going to make a presentation in front of some people, then go and breathe deeply for a while. And especially if you breathe deeply and then have the exhale last longer than inhale. Breathe in. When you do it, then you all breathe in. Take a deep breath. And then have a long, slow exhale. Do it again. Deep in breath. And then as you exhale, long, slow, relaxed exhale. And as you do that, relax. There's your breath. So chances are that's shifted something teeny bit, maybe just a teeny bit for you. Certainly by doing that, you're more connected to yourself now, rather than hanging on to every word I'm saying. You know, but rather you're in touch with your body, you're aware of what's going on in your body. But also, if you took a deep breath, some of you might be aware of tension in your body. A deep breath, sometimes you realize a place of resistance of holding. Sometimes there's chest tension holding in the muscles around the rib cage, sometimes in the belly, in the stomach, sometimes in the shoulders, sometimes in the back. It's a variety of places, mid-back sometimes. And a variety of places, and so you take a deep breath, you can feel where that holding is. And that holding, so as you begin tuning into the breathing, it allows us to adjust it. In different circumstances, we might adjust it in different ways for our benefit. Or it gives us information. We start noticing how we're breathing and what that says about ourselves. Sometimes the first indication I've had of emotionally how I'm feeling has been I noticed my breathing has shifted. And so it's a great book. It's a great kind of teacher for us because it shows us, it teaches us what's going on. And there's a lot of different ways the breath changes and adjusts depending on what's going on. I've been, when I started being a teacher, that's when I became aware, and talking to people in a meditation practice, I became aware of how much people's attitudes, very deep attitudes, held attitudes, are expressed in the breathing. Because I would talk to people about the breathing, their experience of breathing and meditation, and there'd be certain problems people had. Or I would guide people in kind of breath meditation, and it'd become clear in the guidance that certain kind of they're up against certain kind of walls or difficulties. So some little examples would be there was a woman who I was having trouble. She was yawning a lot, having trouble with her meditation because of the yawning. And her, you know, she'd get a little bit focused and then she'd start yawning. And so I did a little guided meditation with her to kind of see what's going on with her breathing when she's meditating. And at some point, just getting settled into the meditation, I was encouraging her to relax a little bit. And I told her to relax her stomach muscles. And as soon as I asked her to relax her stomach muscles, her eyes popped open. And she realized what was going on. She was trained as a young woman, as a girl, to always hold her stomach in. And so she had become a chronically held position for her. And it was affecting how she breathed. And so as she was kind of doing her focusing on the breath and meditation, somehow that holding of the stomach affected how much oxygen, how well she could breathe. And from then, as soon as she saw that, learned that, then she was quite lucky. She was able to relax her breathing and keep it relaxed. Not always so easy to stop chronic patterns in her breathing. I've seen people, as you kind of get into the kind of more subtlety of meditation, begin realizing that there's some dynamic that goes on in the exhale that, you know, is usually so subtle you don't see it in every day. But but subtle doesn't mean that it's insignificant. It might carry some very deep-held attitude that plays itself out in life in other ways. So I've met people who didn't really want to breathe out all the way. Didn't want to exhale all the way because to let go with the exhale, exhale can be a little bit like a letting go, and to let go all the way with the exhale isn't letting go of control. And some people don't want to let go of control. They want to be in control. Or they don't necessarily want to be in control, but giving up control is really frightening. And that kind of space of kind of letting go completely with the exhale leaves a kind of, you know, kind of place of fear that people don't want to go. Now, to the uninitiated, that might seem ridiculous. You know, what's a simple, innocent thing like breathing out? But what I'm trying to tell you is that how we breathe is deeply connected to our psychology. And that the things play itself out in the breathing that that you'd be very surprised. You know, it's such a close, intimate relationship between our psychology and our breathing. And I've also known people for whom they were fine by breathing out all the way. But once they got subtle enough and quiet enough in meditation, they saw that they had an attitude they didn't really want to breathe in, because that, you know, they didn't want to let the world come into them. They didn't want to be oppressed. They want to be free of the world and things and doing and activity, and just be left, leave me alone. And so it was this kind of very deep attitude of leave me alone. The world's an oppressive place, that somehow was playing itself out in the way that they were breathing. And the first indication that this attitude for some people is, can be sometimes, and they discover what goes on in their breathing. People who meditate and get settled, they might not discover the connection between the two, but as you settle and get more and more, at some point you reach that layer where various attitudes, emotions connected to your breathing come to the foreground. And so you have to work through it. And then as you work through it, sometimes you'll find that their breathing shifts and changes as a result of that. And then I've known, just let me know, if people have attitudes, can have attitudes to every point in the whole cycle of breathing. I've known people who were happily breathing in, but then the top of the breath didn't really want to let go. They got it. And they want to hold on to what they have. So, because of this connection the breathing has to our inner life, as we tune into the breath, there's, you know, a number of benefits. One benefit is that we can adjust the breathing to make it healthier. And even as I'm talking to you here, I'm tracking and watching my breathing and making subtle adjustments. So I can give you just as an example of what you can do. I notice that sometimes when I give talks up here, I get a little bit caught up in what I'm saying. Or I get a little bit concerned, am I getting something across to these good people here? And so I can feel that that kind of little concern manifests in me in the breathing, kind of goes up into my chest, a little tight, lift up and all that. But if I pay attention to that, it's a really good... I could pay attention to it mentally, that concern as well, which I do, I'm paying attention as much as I can. But it's very effective to pay attention to it in the breath, because if I notice it here, I'm a little bit tight now, then I can relax back into my belly, and my belly, I'm breathing more from a relaxed belly again. And when I do that, then whatever concern I have or anxiety I have kind of goes away very quickly. If I look at the mind and saw a little bit of anxiety and try to relax the mind, sometimes I can do that. But sometimes, you know, it gets a little more complicated and I start analyzing it. Why am I doing this? And what's the history of this and all that? And it's all very fascinating and interesting. But we'd all have to pause for a long time if I was going to do that up here. And do that. And, you know, for the purposes of the talk, it's a lot easier for all of us concerned if I just kind of, you know, just relaxed the belly and got on with it. So I do this all the time. It's a huge part of my life to tune into my breathing. And it's become kind of almost second nature. So, you know, I've been doing it while I'm talking. You know, it's not like, you know, I lose touch with myself as I talk. That I can watch and feel what's going on here. So we can make the adjustments. The other thing I've said is that mindfulness of breathing can give us lots of information about ourselves and teach us a lot about this. As the breath shifts and changes, then you can learn about yourself. And then you can ask yourself a very interesting question. As you notice that your breathing shifts, you can ask the question, is it worth it? Is it appropriate? Do you really want it to go in that direction? So I've noticed, for example, driving sometimes, that how I drive affects how I breathe. So if I kind of am into kind of, you know, getting someplace, like getting some places, the be all end all, I have to get there quickly or something. You know, then my breathing gets more tight, more constricted, more shallow. And now if I notice that, then do I want to live that way? Do I want to live with that kind of constricted, tight breath? Or do I want to, you know, is it worth sacrificing the inner well-being for getting someplace 2 minutes early? Now in relationship to this, you know, what I think modern medicine is discovering more and more is the tremendous cost effect that stress has on our body. And even small stress, chronically held, constant kind of bombardment of small stress that we hold on to, will affect our body, you know, in a variety of ways. It's kind of like the body has weak links. And so the variety of the stress that we hold in our body, at some point, we'll kind of find the weakest link or wear out the weakest link. And for some people, it's the heart. Some people, it's maybe the stomach. Some people, it's their immune system and a variety of different things that they might kind of give out or get, you know, be compromised. And so I think we know about this, you know, the whole stress response, complicated response that where a variety of, you know, chemicals they get released, which are there. If they're released too often, create all kinds of not only physical problems, but also emotional problems for us. So the stress response, you know, can evoke the production of adrenaline and sometimes cortisone even in the system, which is good if you're being chased by a lion, but not, you know, something to be chronically have in place. And then a relaxation response produces other chemicals, more beneficial, more pleasant ones, pleasure-producing ones like endorphins and melatonin. And so the breath is connected to all that. And so if you have a tight, constricted breath, and like, you know, the word anxiety it comes from the Greek word choke, you know, because there's this effect on their, you know, being choked by it. And so if you're breathing from your upper chest, for example, with anxiety or stress, it's participating in the stress cycles. And if you relax in your lower belly, and your belly stays soft, then chances are you're participating with the relaxation cycles, which come with all the benefits of that. The Buddha didn't know about endorphins, serotonin, adrenaline, all these things. So he didn't talk about those benefits. And the Buddha wasn't interested in ordinary stress reduction, you know, so we could become, you know, better capitalists or better consumers. The Buddha was interested in liberation. And oddly enough, though, in this, or, you know, significantly enough in this conversation today, his definition of liberation was not metaphysical. Didn't require any metaphysical beliefs or any metaphysical understandings. His definition of liberation was liberation from dukkha. The Indian word he used is dukkha. And dukkha is usually translated into English as suffering, liberation from suffering. However, one of the preeminent translators of the Buddha's teachings into English has chosen to translate this word as stress and liberation from stress. But not because it's, you know, this mild stress that we can experience in everyday life, which could kill us. But rather the very, very deep kind of suffering or stress that comes from fundamental attitudes or fetters or attachments, where, for example, attachment to self, attachment to opinions and views, attachment to pleasure, attachment to they say in Buddhism there's even an attachment to ignorance, to being ignoring. Very, very deep held attachments that play itself out in keeping us from being unliberated, from being free, keeping the heart constricted, keeping the mind tight, keeping it narrow, and keeping the breath not fluid and relaxed. So His goal was an ultimate liberation, ultimate release from the very roots and causes of stress and suffering. Not relief from stress, but really a release, deep release from it. And one of the paths for that deep release, deep liberation, is through mindfulness of breathing. And the first there are 16 stages that's given. And it's not necessary to go through all 16 stages. There's lots of Buddhist meditation practices that don't use these 16 stages. And there's another way of practicing mindfulness that doesn't use these 16 stages. This is the one we primarily teach here. But whether you use them or not, what happens in these 16 stages will happen kind of as a byproduct or as a result of other Buddhist meditation practices as well. It's just they don't get the prominence, the attention they get when these shifts and changes as they get in the particular style of meditation called the 16 stages of breathing, 16 stages of anapanasati. So I would like to read to you the very brief synopsis or description of these 16 stages. And as I do this, why don't you breathe? Breathe mindfully. Maybe let yourself, take in a little bit deeper breath than usual, and then a little longer exhale, breathing in and breathing out. First, the preamble, the promotion. When Buddha said, when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven factors of awakening. When the seven factors of awakening are developed and cultivated, they fulfill liberation. And how is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and great benefit? Here, a person who has gone to the forest at the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down, having folded his or her legs crosswise, sits with body erect and with mindfulness established. With mindfulness established, one mindfully breathes in and one mindfully breathes out. Then, breathing in long, one understands I am breathing in long. I have a long in-breath. Breathing out long, one understands I breathe out long. Breathing in short, one understands I breathe in short. Breathing out short, one understands I breathe out short. The person trains as follows. I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. The person trains as follows. I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. I shall breathe out, tranquilizing, calming the bodily formation. The person continues by training as follows. I shall breathe in, experiencing joy. I shall breathe out, experiencing joy. The person trains as follows. I shall breathe out, experiencing pleasure. I shall breathe in, experiencing pleasure. The person trains as follows. I shall breathe in, experiencing the mental formations. I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formations. Then the person trains. I shall breathe in, calming the mental formation. I shall breathe out, calming the mental formation. Then the person trains, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind. I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind. I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind. I shall breathe in, concentrating the mind. I shall breathe out, concentrating the mind. I shall breathe in, liberating the mind. I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. I shall breathe in, contemplating impermanence. I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. I shall breathe in, contemplating fading away. I shall breathe out, contemplating fading away. I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. I shall breathe out, contemplating sensation. I shall breathe in, contemplating letting go. I shall breathe out, contemplating letting go. And that is how mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, so it is of great fruit and great benefit. So 16 stages. Some of the language and words here are kind of technical Buddhist language words. It begins with a very simple familiarizing yourself with your breathing. And here, becoming familiar, it says just know whether you breathe in short or long, you have a short or long breath. But I take it to be much bigger than that. Just becoming intimately familiar with all it is about your breathing, what goes on. Can you be aware of where you breathe in your body, what parts of your body move, where the constrictions are. You can become aware of the rate of your breathing. You can become aware of the depth of your breath, shallowness of it, many things. And then become aware of as much of your body as you can, the whole body. So not just focus on some narrow part of your body, the diaphragm or the nose where the air goes in and out, but kind of develop kind of a broad, holistic, all-encompassing awareness of your whole body as you breathe. Very helpful thing to do. Buddhist practice is a lot about becoming embodied and connected to your body. And then once you have that full connection to your body, then use your breathing to calm your body, to relax it, to let go. Having done that, then the interesting thing, the next step, is to breathe in and out, evoking joy. And here it calls pleasure or ease or happiness. It's very interesting. Kind of the suggestion that's a path, that's part of the path of practice, not only to be relaxed, but joy and happiness are an important part of it. And then it goes on to there, become familiar with, as you're breathing, as you stay connected to your breathing, to simultaneously become aware of your mind, the state of your mind, the activities of your mind, and then intentionally as you breathe, with the help of your breath, to start calming, settling the activities of the mind. Especially for overactive minds, this is very helpful. But to calm and settle the mind, so the mind become much more lucid, much more clear organ of perception. So the mind or consciousness becomes, you know, a real treasure that, you know, nourishes us and feeds us. So the calm and all the extra activity of the mind. And then once all this calming and settling and relaxing has happened, then the mind starts getting concentrated. And as the mind gets concentrated, at some point, a concentrated, lucid, clear mind is directed to pay attention to impermanence. Start noticing how things arise and pass. And maybe you have to be initiated or kind of get a better sense of Buddhist meditation to understand the tremendous opportunity that and the way in which Buddhist meditation opens up to the world of impermanence. But in Buddhism, the world of impermanence opens up to a deeper and deeper capacity or possibility of release, of letting go. And the last stages of this 16 stages has to do with stages of letting go more and more deeply, letting go. And then when there's letting go is deep enough, then you've been released, you've been liberated from the places of holding, the places that cause suffering, stress. So mindfulness of breathing, when developed and cultivated, is a great fruit and great benefit. And in our modern times, medicine and all that, I think we have a much greater understanding of the benefits and the fruit of breath, of breathing well, than the Buddha did. And so so we have to modify what he said. He said, mindfulness of breathing, when cultivated and developed, is of, he said, great, we have to say now, immense benefit and immense fruit. So that's what we'll do over the course of the 9 months, is kind of systematically go through these 16 stages. And it's something I'm very much looking forward to, because I really would like to work with people more closely with their breathing. Spend a whole year on breathing, it's just great. So I know some of you can't come, but I hope that people will come and we'll kind of work, explore the whole terrain of the breathing. And end of the 9 months, you're kind of hopefully have a quantum leap in your familiarity and appreciation and maybe love of your breathing. And I'll end with a story from Gurdjieff, that great Russian spiritual teacher. He was kind of a Sufi, and he went to, from Russia, he went to, I think, Afghanistan or someplace like that, Pakistan, to study with Sufi masters in the 1920s. And he tells a story of finding a Sufi master in Afghanistan. It takes a long, back then it took a long time to find, you know, one of the great seekers, you know. And when he showed up, the Sufi master said, "Well, why are you here?" And Gurdjieff said, "I'm here to learn how to breathe." And the Sufi master reportedly laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. It was the funniest thing. And then spent the next years teaching Gurdjieff how to breathe. I'm sure he knew how, but I'm sure you all know how to breathe. But I'm sure there's lots of room to learn something. May your breathing become one of your best friends. Thank you.